Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Today, my friends, is going to be a mailbag day, and got all kinds of different things we're going to talk about because that's what people send me, and they're always interesting to see what the world out there is asking. Today's first mailbag is an article someone sent me. It's the C.B. Richard Ellis Cap Rate Survey, Thursday, March 9, 2023. And it says this cap rate survey was for 2022. Second half of 2022. So they go this, they do this report twice a year. And this was the latter part of 2022, which would be the beginning of the, half a year that we're, you know, that we're in right now. So the half year we're in right now, they haven't come out with it yet. So it says basically here, here's a copy of our twice yearly survey reflecting 3,600 cap rate estimates. That sheds light on how investor sentiment is changing amid uncertain market conditions. So we take a look at this, and here's a few key findings. One, properties on the market have attracted fewer bidders, and the bid-ask spreads have widened. So what does that mean? That means that you think your property's worth $1 million, and it used to be you put it on the market for $1 million, you'd have 50 people want it, 20, 25 people want it, whatever the number was, large number. And you would say, okay, well, you've all made offers of $1 million, or some of you want $1.5 million. Let's do this. Let's do a best and final. And you kick out the bottom 80%. You keep the top 20%. You say, okay, now give me the best and final. Give me your best offer. And they come back with as high as they're willing to go. Well, typically that would have been in the last 5 years, that had been something like $1.5 million, $1.10 million, maybe $1.15 million, something like that. And, you know, anywhere from 5 to 20% increase above what the list price was. That's if there even was a list price. In many cases, most times now, they don't even put in list prices because they don't want to hold you down. They want to let you just bid as high as you'll possibly bid. They have something they call a whisper price, which is this is what we think we're going to get. This is what the seller wants, somewhere between those two things, which, I mean, the whisper price is somewhere between what we think we'll get and what the seller wants. Well, times have changed now, and that was, those spreads were getting further and further apart. In other words, what the seller wanted and what the buyers were willing to pay was getting, was becoming farther and farther apart. So I ask $1 million, or the seller asks $1 million, and I only offer $800,000. And so this bid price spread keeps these deals from getting done unless one of the two people or both of them move closer to the center. Now, what this is saying is in 2022, the end of 2022, that spread had started to get larger and larger and larger, meaning buyers didn't want to pay what sellers wanted them to pay. I will tell you this. Being where we're at now, and this is March of 23, the spread is even larger than it was when this report came out. Buyers are not willing to pay what the sellers want. Does that mean deals are not getting done? No. No, it doesn't. It means they're getting done, but not at the price sellers want. I'm in a couple different bids right now on deals, and every single one of them, the bids are below what the original whisper price was. You know, they don't write anything down on a piece of paper, but they're telling you, I think this is what this will go for, or this is what the seller wants, one of the two. And the bids that I'm seeing, in other words, I don't see everybody else's bid, don't get me wrong, but I put in my bids on these different type of properties, and they've come back with, okay, well, we think you're going to be able to make it to best and final, which means I have to be in at least the upper 20% of the bids, and my bids are nowhere near the price that the seller originally wanted. So it tells me that. Now, I also, because I own real estate companies all over the country, I'm privy to the inside of these transactions, and I see it happening, that there is a larger spread all the time. And I see, even if there isn't, some people try to play the game where they'll offer you a lot of money, a lot more than what everybody else is willing to offer, get into contract, and then go, oh, there's some stuff here I didn't see, and I'm going to retrade the deal. I want to go lower. And a lot of times the seller go like, well, I'm already three quarters of the way through this transaction, and all I have to do is say I'll take a little bit lower price, and the deal's going to close. You know, as nasty as that process and that way of doing business is, it's really sometimes functional. I have to say it. I hate to say it, but it's sometimes functional, right? Other people, like myself, tend to use the process, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you a price. I know you don't like the price, but I will close at that price. So you either have a guaranteed close at this price or go play with the guy that's willing to give you more and hope he doesn't retrade you down. So that's really the two sides of that possibility, I guess is the way to put it. And, you know, you have to decide which side you want to play that game on. The next thing that's on here, it says cap rates continue to decompress. Now, that's another one I need to explain to you if you don't understand this. A cap rate is the rate of return that you get if you bought this property and paid all cash. So the lower the cap rate, the lower the rate of return. Now, let's inverse that a second. How do you get a lower rate of return by paying a larger price for the investment? So small cap rates favor the sellers, and large cap rates favor the buyers. And over the last 10 years, cap rates have been compressing, meaning the property is not selling for more because it makes more money. It's selling for more because the marketplace is saying it's worth more without doing any better as far as performance. Whereas in the normal quote-unquote world, you would buy a property for more if its performance went up, and you'd pay less if its performance went down. But simply the cap rate compression process, which is the marketplace getting tighter, more and more people throwing more and more money at less and less deals, is an inflationary process where the cap rates get smaller. In other words, you're making less and less money on real estate simply because the market won't let you. Something's going to happen that whatever it was they anticipated when they bought this thing, those facts are not true. And now they're getting lambasted, and they're going to have to let the property go at a lower price than what they paid for it. Moving along here. Next article that I wanted to cover was, it says, I know that your podcast, you say that you like to stay extremely liquid. With the recent Silicon Valley Bank going under, it was stated that 95% of the accounts were above the $250,000 FDIC insurance limit. How do you stay liquid and account for counterparty risk line with Silicon Valley Bank? Do you have 50 plus bank accounts all under $250,000? Do you take the risk when purchasing a property and doing transactions over $250,000? How do you think about these issues? I do have many, many, many accounts. I don't know exactly how many, but it's quite a few. Last time I checked, because I had that very same question, but I was told that it's $250,000 FDIC insurance for each person named on the account. So by simply adding my wife to account, I get, instead of $250,000 per account, I get $500,000 per account. Let's say you, on the other hand, if you've got kids, for each kid you put on there, that's another $250,000, I believe. So like I was talking to one of my customers, and I said, look, it's you and your wife, and you got two kids that living at home that obviously are not going to get control of any of your finances. So you don't have to worry about them dipping into the accounts. They can't go down there and dip in without you signing for it. But having their name on those accounts gives you an additional $250,000. So by having four people on that account, conceivably, if what I've been told is true, you've got $1 million per account. Now, not too many of you have a problem, because I know I have more than 30 accounts, by the way. I just want you to know. I know I have more than 30 bank accounts. I don't know how many I have. I haven't counted, but I know it's over 30, right? And so if you had $1 million in each account, that's pretty safe right there. It covers up quite a bit of money. So that's the way I think about it. To some extent, where I've got really, really good interest rates from some banks, I've got more than what the FDIC is covering, and that's a risk. And it was a risk that I didn't even think about until just the other day when these two banks went out of business. Then it makes you think. Maybe the extra interest rate isn't worth it. You know, the ease of having all your money in one spot isn't worth it, et cetera, et cetera. I'll tell you this, though. When I put together financial documents to be able to qualify for these loans and to show these people that, hey, I qualify to go buy your piece of real estate, even on personal residence, when I'm buying, like, the last couple homes I've looked at have been $20 million to $30 million price tags, they want to see money. It's really a pain in the butt to pull up, you know, 30 different bank statements and show them, you know, you white out or black out all the account numbers and, you know, addresses and names or whatever you need to do. Just leave just your name and the money and the amount. And it's a pain in the butt, but it's that or not have the safety of having small amounts in each account. Opinion piece. Bing, opinion piece right now. I don't think that the Fed should have bailed out the money above $250,000 in these big banks. If they should have, it should have been to the tune of maybe $1 million in each account at the most to give these people that have $10, $20, $30, $50 million in this bank. That just doesn't make sense. What about the rest of the people if the other banks start falling apart? You know, I know the Democrats don't care about spending money. I guess their theory is that, well, we'll just keep backstopping it with your money. Taxpayer money. I don't really know. But I don't think if I were in charge, which I'll never be, I would have paid and saved all those people. I would have saved up to $1 million or whatever. Also, the bank guys that got away with it all and paid themselves bonuses right before they went bankrupt, I would take those bonuses back. I know it can be done because it got done before. It has been done before when banks have gone broke or other big financial institutions gone broke. They've take back, it's called clawback. They claw back those bonuses and say, no, you don't deserve a bonus. You can't take that money because that's money that belongs to other people that you destroyed. So, nope, can't do it. All right, let's see where we're at on time here. And we've got a couple minutes left, so let's see what our next one is. Oh, the next one's a cute one. I get sent this periodically, year after year after year after year, like no one's ever seen it before. But it's the article about the monkey picking stocks. So I got just a minute and a half here. We'll throw it in here. It says, what happened was, back in 1973, Princeton University professor Burton Malkey claimed in his best-selling book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, that a blindfolded monkey throwing darts at the newspaper's financial pages could select a portfolio that would do just as well as any carefully selected by experts. Malachi was wrong, stated Rob Arndt, CEO of Research Affiliates, while speaking at the IMN Global Index of EFTs conference earlier this month. He states, the monkeys have done better. So what are they basically saying? They're basically saying picking stocks from the outside in with all this computer trading, with all these people that have massive controls of portfolios, a guy on the outside picking stocks just can't do it. And a guy on the inside picking stocks just can't do it. If you're not someone that has those giant computers, computer trading, or control a whole gigantic billion, multi-billion dollar portfolio where you can move markets, it's guesswork. And any monkey can do guesswork. We'll be right back with the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
I was at a seminar one time and a guy was sitting up there and he was saying, what you really need is you need the young, aggressive entrepreneur people to go out there and take that money and invest it with them. I walked up to the front of the stage and I said, hey, I'm that guy you're talking about that should be mentoring these people on how to do this. The guy goes, sir, we don't allow solicitation. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm here to tell you I'm exactly the guy you were telling them to look for. And I'm willing to help them for nothing. And the guy goes, if you don't stop soliciting, I'm going to have the security come and get you. And I said, I can see you're a scam. I'll just leave. Everything I said had gone through the intercom. So I walked out of the seminar room and 200 people followed me. And that's how Lifestyles are starting.
Are you ready to get up and follow Dell? Join us today at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. Today we're doing the mailbag, and I've got a long email here. And I'm tempted to paraphrase it, then I'm tempted to do the whole thing, being that I might leave something out of importance. Starts out, my name is blank. I'm 39 years old with three kids and a great wife. That's all great. Signed up for 2-day class and have completed it. I learned a lot about how real estate works. Appreciate all the help. Would like to get your advice on the following. I currently own and operate a construction company, own and operate 30 single family houses and one industrial property I currently use for my concrete business. The equity I have in homes is $5 million, and I have no debt in my construction company, assets, equipment, stuff, roughly worth $1.5 to $2 million. I don't have any college experience. I have done all this with hard work, my gut and failing and not wanting to live paycheck to paycheck. So in other words, he's successful. That's a good thing. So let's get to his question. When I was first started listening to you a year ago, you really caught my ear. What you say about life and your personal life story, I really connected with in respect to you. I do very well in my concrete business, and the real estate is more or less a side job for me. Now, remember, he has 30 rent houses. I wanted to maintain and increase my current financial lifestyle, which is nice, and lose the work lifestyle. At the point of my life, I can go one way or another, to the next level in real estate and keep my concrete company going strong at the same time. I would like to solely get all real estate within 5 years and retire with your lifestyle. So he's asking me basically, can we do this? At this point in my life, I can go one way or another, become a larger, more profitable concrete contractor, or get into lifestyles. Do you think you guys can help me get to the next level? Well, it's very obvious that we can help him get to the next level. He's got all the resources. He's got the assets. He's got the cash. He's got business acumen. So there's absolutely no problem with us helping him. Now, I've got two other concerns with this. And that is, number one, he may have a problem, and I don't know this for a fact. I asked him to tell me what it is he does that he wants to get out of, and he basically does all of the managerial work at this concrete company. And I'm asking him, why is it so? Well, I didn't actually ask him. I just asked what he did. But my thought process is that he may be have a bit of the workaholic type personality in him, and or a controlling personality that wants to be in control of this so the business does well. Allah, like he says, he doesn't want to be broke. He's got, you know, we're living in that fear mode that if I do it wrong, I'm going to lose it all, right? So I understand that, and I understand that control. The thing that I had to learn was I had to learn to walk away from that. And I read a book called The E-Myth by Dr. Gerber. And basically what it's talking about is that people have this belief that just because they own a company that they're an entrepreneur, but you're not really an entrepreneur. You don't really own a business. You really own a job, and you go to work every day and do the job you would have done if you worked for someone else. Now you have a lot of other things on top of that you have to do now that you own a company, but in essence, you're still in there working a job every day. And the real skill set to be an entrepreneur is to learn how to get out of the day-to-day jobs, to take the org chart, put it on your desk, and go, how many of these positions am I filling? And he's filling my... I asked him what it would cost to replace himself. He said it would take two full-time guys earning this amount of money, which was quite a large amount of money. So what he's basically saying is he's working two full-time jobs. And working two full-time jobs is not an easy thing to do. And you can see why he... is wanting to consider options on how to get out of this. Now, when you get to that point and you decide, I am going to do something different, you really have to take a look at what your options are. And your options are really twofold. And one fold is to say, okay, I'm just going to hire the people and put them in place. And because I put those people in place, I'm going to take less income. But the reality is in this situation, in most cases, is that when you put those extra people in there, the increased productivity and your time to mentally sit around and think about what else could I do, he probably would increase his business at the concrete company, even though he's extracted himself. And that's what happened with me. When I was doing all the seminars and I was doing all the teaching and I was doing all the consulting at Lifestyles, in fact, I even did the accounting. I did the accounting, I did the seminars, I did the teaching, and I did the consulting. I could only have the company in Houston, Texas. When I was willing to give up one of those jobs, which was the accounting, I was able to expand a little bit and go to other cities. I gave up the coaching and mentoring in another city, but I still went there and taught the classes. So there was only so many cities we do. I was up to three cities going from city to city, city doing classes. And then one day I go, you know what, this has got to end. And so I hired people to do the classes. And I would only do them in Houston where I lived, which was easier for me just to get up and do the class and not have to drive all over the country and give the classes. All of a sudden, once I did that, then our business expanded. We were able to do a lot more business because I wasn't around. Then it also made it possible for us to do it all over the country because there was no limitation to how many people we had and where they were and location or anything. So then the company really expanded and expanded to a point that I really couldn't even have guessed it would expand that much. I mean, I thought it would expand. I had planned for it to expand. I did it because I thought it would expand. But you really can't even imagine how much potential there is because you're holding back that potential by you being in charge of everything and doing everything. And so in my case, and I think in many other cases of people that I've helped work through this, it really, really helps to get you out of the business. Secondly, it clears your mind. Now, he's already got 30 rent houses, so he's already got quite a bit of passive income, and he says he's got $2 million worth of equity in those. No, maybe it was $5 million worth of equity. I'd have to read back here again, but it's quite a bit of equity. Yeah, $5 million in equity in these houses. So it's very simple for him to take that equity out of those houses and either go buy more houses if he prefers houses or take a step up and buy an apartment complex where there's an entire staff that runs the thing. He doesn't even have to go there. He doesn't have to do anything with it other than hire the staff that he's going to have operate. And if he doesn't want to do that, he can hire a management company and they can operate the property for him. The next email I have is a gentleman that joined Lifestyles and he's got some questions. It's an interesting scenario. I'd like to address it because it's got some real challenges that you need to think about, right? And one of the points I want to make is when you've got challenges in life, maybe you can't go and do the optimal thing in life, but would not the suboptimal still be better than nothing at all? So let's say you're handicapped. You know, you can't run in races. Your legs are paraplegic, or even less than maybe you're just in, you know, walker. Do you just give up? And I'm not saying I might not. Don't get me wrong. I'm not judging people. I'm just saying, but wouldn't it be smarter if you just at least tried to get something out of life, get more out of life, not something, but more out of life. Try to do better than what you've got. So here's a gentleman who's got some challenges, and I'm going to read them. And I'm not going to use his name, of course, or his location because I didn't ask to use this, but it's very powerful. It says, it's my pleasure to email you. I've been wanting to for some time, but I was embarrassed, so I didn't. But now I have a decision to make, whether lifestyles is possible or whether or not. I'm turning 60 in a few days, and I lost my job a couple of weeks ago. So let's start with that. Age has nothing to do with it, all right, other than if you don't care. Losing your job a week ago is a massive challenge. There's no doubt about it. Goes on and says, I'm single parent. Now, that's a challenge of a 19-year-old disabled child. That's a challenge. So now you're 60 years old. You've got a 19-year-old child you're taking care of by yourself, and you've got no job. That's a challenge. My house is paid off. That's a Dave Ramsey problem. That's a mistake. I have $10,000 left on my truck. Sounding like I want to pay it off. Do not pay it off. Leave it right where it's at, no matter what we discuss here today. I'll pay it off in whatever payments that are available. No other debt. I have no other debt. About $45,000 in cash and approximately $60,000 in a Roth IRA. So the $45,000 in cash is your living fund, so you really can't do a lot with that. But the $60,000 in the Roth IRA, I'm sorry, Roth 401k, is really useless. You're doing nothing with it. You need to do something with it, whether it's buy real estate into the Roth. But the problem is, and this is the lie that everybody, they don't teach you this, guys. The lie is it's in a Roth IRA. You can't get to it. So it actually, it's a Roth 401k, so I don't even know the ramification there. But the bottom line is, he's 60 years of age, so he's over 59 and a half, so he can start pulling that money out without taxes, but he's going to have to pay taxes on it. That money is earning him zero. What do I mean by that? He's not getting a paycheck every month. There's no pension coming from that Roth. There's no money coming out of that Roth. So what he needs to do is, whatever the case may be, get that money out of that Roth and get it into some type of an investment that's earning him cash flow. Right now, he needs cash flow. He's got no job, right? He needs cash flow. According to Zillow, which I know very little about, the home, my home is worth about $340,000. Now, remember, his home is paid in full. He needs to get that money out of that home. Now, he's happy he's got a paid in full home, but he's got no income, right? He's got $340,000 worth of equity, but he's got no income. Still got to pay taxes and insurance, and he feels comfortable because he's got a place to live. He doesn't have to pay mortgage payments on. This is a pure Dave Ramsey problem. He's stuck in Dave Ramseyism, and he can't get out of it. His problem is not where he is financially. His problem is he has no income, and his investments, his money, his equity, his net worth are wrapped up in things that pay him no money. If all that money, let's think about this. If he had $340,000 and $60,000 in his Roth, that's $400,000 working for him at, say, 10%. That's $40,000 a year, right? And being real estate investments would be tax-free. So he'd be earning somewhere around $3,000 a month he'd have to live on. Goes on, says, I'm a member of LU of about a week. I thought there would be a way to leverage the equity in my home, but I was naive and didn't think about the job situation. I do believe in LUI, but I don't see a way for me to make this work without some cash flow. I'm planning to getting an insurance adjuster's license as soon as possible, but I would appreciate any ideas you may possibly have. Thanks in advance. All right. So this is the difference between people who get somewhere in life and people who stay stuck where they're at in life. He's got a lot of challenges. I would, number one, get a job. But that's not the only thing. Don't think that the job is the solution, but the job is a part of a solution here. Doesn't even matter what the job is. A guy lost his job. He doesn't need an insurance adjuster's license to go get another job. He can work for Walmart as a greeter at 60 years of age. It doesn't matter. It's a paycheck that's important. There's some money coming in. He's got to feed himself and this child he's taking care of, right? Number two, I'd get the money out of the house. Say, well, how do you do that? Well, there are some asset lenders that will lend you 50% of the money in the house, even though you don't have a job. Asset-based lending, but then you're going to have a mortgage payment. So, again, without a job, that's not a lot of fun. But what I would do is I'd just sell the house. So, well, where would you live then? I'd go rent someplace, you know, or if I were a vet or something, I could get a zero down loan. But the bottom line is that I would go, well, I don't know if a vet has to have a job. Maybe he does. I would sell the house and go rent someplace, being that now you got $400,000 that you could do something with. And you're going to be able to invest $400,000 even if you don't have a job, because I don't have a job. Many other people I know don't have jobs, although I do have income. And income is as good as, if not better than, having a job. So in this guy's case, he's got to make a decision. So will Lifestyles work for him? Lifestyles will only work for him if he's willing to take some drastic moves, make some drastic moves or take some chances, which is either get a job or sell that house and get the money, or both. All right, folks out there, hope this helped. Look forward to talking to you tomorrow. Remember, this is not the money. It's the lifestyle. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.